I can report to you in all honesty that in recent weeks I've eaten turkey and I've eaten crow, and turkey's better.
I don't think that you can goose the press on this one.
I tell you, in any campaign, you're going to have the so-called hawks and the doves.
I read about these turkey affairs, and I read about Estes Kefauver coming out here and getting a turkey, and what happened to him, so I thought I'd just pat the turkey.
Well, maybe this whole thing is just for the birds.
Campaign 66. It has been 10 months. The pre-convention shuffling, the conventions themselves, the primaries, and the general election campaigning. 10 months of back-breaking, endless toil, countless speeches, stated and restated positions, of automobiles, planes, and trains, of 87 counties and 8 districts and 1 state, Minnesota, in Campaign 66. The primary balloting is over. Lieutenant Governor A.M. Keith, endorsed by the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, has been defeated by incumbent Carl Rohlbaug by a landslide margin. From his headquarters in Minneapolis, Keith speaks. It is mid-evening, September 13th.
I think that the first thing in politics, you know, only one person wins and one loses. And I want to congratulate Governor Rohlbaug on his victory. He conducted a campaign, in my judgment, that was straightforward and it was effective. As I've said, in this business, only one wins and one loses. It's a remarkable process. I don't think ever in the history of Minnesota have so many given so much so willingly. There never has a candidate had such fine supporters as I've had, and I want to thank you all personally. You're the friends, in my judgment, of the Democratic Farmer Labor Party. And I want you to continue in your determination to see this cause through, to remain in the ranks of the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, to make your voices heard in the party councils.
The people have decided. I appreciated the comments and the spirit of the Lieutenant Governor, Sandy Keith, in his statement to the press and radio just a few moments ago when he acknowledged, no, he was magnanimous and considerate of all our feelings. I'm sure that all of us want to win in November.
The GOP gubernatorial candidate, Harold Levander, replies quickly.
The one basic issue in the campaign ahead is the governor's poor record. Even his lieutenant governor, A.M. Keith, agrees on this point. Governor Rohlbaug was a weak governor. He is a governor who doesn't care. He surrounded himself with recount cronies rather than the best qualified people. He even appointed judges on the basis of politics rather than qualifications. That is, when he did fill the vacancies at all.
And so the campaign is off and running. For the Republicans, it will be P.K. Peterson, former mayor of Minneapolis for Railroad and Warehouse Commissioner, incumbent Val Dearnson for State Treasurer, incumbent Stafford King for Auditor, State Representative William O'Brien of St. Paul for Secretary of State, Minneapolis lawyer Douglas Head for Attorney General, Winona radio station owner James Getz for Lieutenant Governor, and Harold Levander, South St. Paul attorney for governor. What of Levander? How does he campaign, speak, travel, think? Profile of a candidate with KSTP's J.B. Eckert.
1966-67 edition of Who's Who in America. Page 1253, column 3, second name from the bottom. Harold
Levander, welcome to Thief River Falls, the home of friendly Norwegians.
As I talk to people all the way from International Falls down to Worthington...
Traveling from International Falls down to Worthington, crisscrossing the state many times over, Harold Levander campaigns for the governorship of the state of Minnesota. The sounds you hear this evening were recorded on one of those many trips. The interviews were recorded in the rear of a limousine racing toward the Twin Cities from central Minnesota.
Efficient and honest government.
I have felt an obligation to be of service to the people of Minnesota, and
you're a spokesman for so many thousands of people, and that you have a responsibility to them. Is this in your mind always, too?
Yes, you realize that when you're a spokesman for a party, and particularly after you've had the primaries and you have gotten the substantial vote of hundreds of thousands of people in Minnesota, you have an obligation and a representative capacity, and recognizing the difficulty that any Republican has in Minnesota, because we are a minority party, it does mean that you have a special obligation to do an extraordinary job if you can, both in the way of energy and strategy and planning. But it, even under the best of circumstances in Minnesota, it's not easy at this stage, where you have to make such a tremendous inroads into independent and Democratic vote if you're going to win an election.
Well, we've got Paul coming here.
Of the time is 11:03 p.m. Harold Levander, Bill O'Brien, the Secretary of State candidate, the campaign manager, and myself just landed at the Thief River Falls Airport.
Thank you.
Once the luggage and the recorders and the campaigners had been wedged into the car, there was a discussion.
You know, you're at before, Paul. It would be awfully good.
I suppose I ought to really start.
You guys could take a minute.
These people will not be here tomorrow, will they?
No.
Then they're coming.
And it was decided to attend the meeting. It's now 11:15 p.m. The place is the Rex Cafe, downtown Thief River Falls.
Here he is, right here.
Hello.
The 7-county, 3-district chairmen and chairwomen extended their hands. Harold Levander vigorously shook each and had a word for each of the persons, and then talked to the crowd. Just before midnight, Mr. Levander and Bill O'Brien were rounded up, shuttled into the car, and whisked to the motel. But the day wasn't done for the gubernatorial candidates.
You seem to know more people, but you can't know everybody. When you move from town to town, district to district, county to county, who's there to help you?
Well, we have Levander chairmen in every county that are of a great assistance to us, and who set up the details of the mechanics of where we're going. But of course, you're right in the fact that one of the real satisfactions I get of campaigning is to run into so many people, many of whom I've not seen in 10, 15, 20 years or more.
There were conferences with district chairmen that lasted until early in the morning concerning the topics for discussion, those that were of most interest to residents in the Thief River area. By 1 a.m., Harold Levander was in bed. By 6 a.m., he was up again. By 9 a.m., he had finished a speech, answered a number of questions, and was on his way to a radio station.
KTRF Radio, Thief River Falls, Minnesota. Time is now 9:30, temperature at 42 degrees. Right now, it's Coffee Time with Sylvia, brought to you today.
A 30-minute interview followed on Coffee Time with Sylvia, and the name of Harold Levander was disseminated to hundreds of persons. But sometimes the face-to-face greeting works out best. The factories.
I'd like to leave my card with you and introduce myself, Harold Levander, candidate for governor. I'd like your help in November. Thank you. Harold Levander, candidate for governor. Appreciate your help. Just put that card in your pocket. You can read that about it.
And in the factory offices.
Thank you. Appreciate your help in November.
You can encounter it.
Thank you. Harold Levander, glad to meet you. How do you do? Glad to meet you. Appreciate your help in November.
And at truck stops. What gives you the biggest boost on these? People to turn out to meet you?
The attitude and the confidence that people say, and the warmth at which they express the feeling that they are interested and they're working and how do you do? And that they give you the feeling that if you can do something for these people, it's really worthwhile.
So you feel good about that?
Yeah, yeah. Harold Levander, candidate for governor. Harold Levander, candidate for governor.
How do you do? Very happy to know you.
You
pleasure.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Take him to the cleaner.
How's the hand? Pretty dirty?
Oh, I don't see. Look at that.
When did you really feel that you wanted to be governor of Minnesota?
There has been loose talk, I suppose, ever since I was in college, but I have felt that I wanted to establish my law practice, and the children were still in college, and where I had built a home and had some obligations to take care of. Now that the children are, the two of them are through college. Last fall, August, September, October, we had discussions about it up at the lake with when my brother, who vacations with us up at Journey's End, and the real final decision, I guess, was made probably in October, when some 40, 50, or 60 people came down to my house who were long, lifelong friends, and sort of had a delegation to sit down and talk it over, and came down with the purpose of trying to encourage me to get into the race, and then decided in November to actually enter the race, and then we had the kickoff in December 13th, and since that we've been going full blast.
No matter where he speaks, the issues are always brought forth. Schools, at a luncheon in East Grand Forks.
But that there are those who ought to be trained locally, and that they ought to be trained so that they can stay in the community.
At a town meeting in Crookston, the lack of physicians.
We have recommended that a scholarship program be established in Minnesota, and I think if we would make as a condition of that scholarship that a man who goes to the medical school should stay in Minnesota and practice in the country for 3 or 5 years, we would be able to encourage more men to get into medical school and then to go out and...
At a coffee party in Thief River Falls, the problem of tourism.
We had our highways built so that our tourists could travel. If we had wayside rest stations so that the campers could stop. Now that's getting to be a new innovation. People have their trailers and their tents.
No matter where he goes, the issues of the campaign follow. But with the 56-year-old campaigner goes his personality, his drive, his way with people. He's a candidate true. But at a breakfast in Moorhead, Minnesota, 200 persons watch that candidate as he eats and as he drinks his coffee. The night before, they watch a tired candidate triumphantly march into the top of the Mart room at the FM hotel. And there they talk to him. There they shake his hands, and they know he's real. And at all his lectures and talks and his appearances, he stutters a bit. He nervously answers some questions. He pauses to think. He's a human being.
I'm also a lawyer, and you know, there are a lot of stories that go around about the legal profession. And I want to set you at ease and straight that those of you who have confidence in the lawyers, and I see Mr. Tweeton here, who's a fellow lawyer, and I say this in his behalf as well as my own. We lawyers have to once in a while toot our own horn a little bit. I was traveling in Europe in 1937, and we stopped at Southampton while the boat was loading for a little while, and we had a couple of hours that we could spend. And so they asked, they told us we could go on shore, and a friend of mine and I walked out, and we came along an old, old cemetery. And we went in and we started to read the tombstones on some of the old stones there. And one I read there was extremely interesting, and I remembered it, and I've repeated it many times, because it read like this: "Here lies John and August Benn. They were lawyers and honest men. God does work wonders now and then."
I've wanted pictures. That's when I was a truck driver.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
I've wanted some for campaign literature.
Oh, aren't they cute?
His past is part of his present.
When I was driving,
and he utilizes it with interest to others. At a coffee party in Thief River Falls, one of his old classmates at Gustavus Adolphus College had arranged his early life history with photos, gingerly given her by various other alumni. Harold was thrilled, and he talked to us about them.
Harold, do you remember anything particular about any of these pictures?
This is the debate with the team from Oxford. Lee Stark, who's now the Episcopal Bishop of the New Jersey, who was my partner. And these are the two gentlemen, and this is the most of the debate people, Pi Kappa Delta people from Gustavus. And sure, this is my year when I was balding. That's a picture of balding, and that's my debate partner. And this is the
picture of running the high hurdles. This one here was, I think, even before it was a freshman year when I was a high school, came from high school.
What about the ones down below, the cutouts from the Herald?
Well, here's two pictures when I was driving truck for the Watertown Motor Express, hauling livestock and machinery from Minneapolis and St. Paul and South St. Paul to Watertown. And that's at the time when you still wore golf knickers. I played golf.
Who is that here?
That's my father, who's in the clerical, and that is taken outside of the parsonage at Watertown.
Hello.
We're outside the mother house of a Catholic order of nuns in Crookston. The son of the Lutheran minister has come to discuss politics with the mother superior.
Because there's an interesting background, my father was a Lutheran minister at Watertown, Minnesota, and Father Real was the Catholic priest there. And there established a friendship between these two men. They had an interest in architecture and in church symbolism, and they mm-hmm. both traveled extensively in Europe. So they pretty soon established the practice of Father Real coming to our house on one Monday and Dad going up to his house on the following Monday, and they kept that on for years.
They were ecumenical, weren't they?
They started the ecumenical movement.
But perhaps Irishman Bill O'Brien, Secretary of State candidate, had the last word.
Somebody once asked me how they voted, and I said, well, they all vote religiously.
Meet and say hello to some of our senior citizens. My special reason and
a small birthday cake, complete with candles, rotated on a small musical platter in the midst of some wheeled-chaired, nodding senior citizens in East Grand Forks. The day was gray. The old people watched and listened to the gentle gubernatorial candidate, who also spoke Swedish to a 77-year-old birthday girl as she shook hands and nodded from her wheelchair.
I met a man named Nils Peterson who came from Småland in Sweden, the same parish that my father came. And I just had the pleasure of visiting with a Swedish lady here, so that I can say,
Och här är många här som talar svenska här.
Ja, jag såg en tidning där som är på svenska. Det första svenska tidningen jag har sett för länge.
You keep going all the time. Now, yesterday morning you started at 6:15. You got through about 11:15, almost 12 o'clock last night. That's 18 hours.
That's right. That's been the routine for months. And I think the reason that you get hardened into it is that you get used to it. You can surprisingly adjust yourself to get along on much less sleep than you've customarily done. And I did lose weight and haven't gained it back yet. I lost about 10 pounds and gained 2 of it back.
There is no Sunday in your life, is it?
No, and I don't get much chance for exercise. Usually, when we're out on trips like this, I get up 15 minutes early and take a walk around the parking lot of the motel, and that's about the only exercise that I really get. And I've only played the golf. I usually like to play golf, but this summer, I've played 6 holes on 3 different times. That's the total amount of golf I've played. And we've had very little social life. We've almost had to cancel out on all of the parties and evening dinners and things of that kind. And you miss that, and it's difficult because the friends that you've had that are close social friends, you miss the opportunity of seeing them. And now for almost 9 months, we've had very little social life. I haven't seen a single show or been to any form of entertainment unless it's been necessary as a part of a program to go someplace.
How about a football game? You seen one of those?
We saw the half of one game, and I've had, ever since the Vikings started, I've had season tickets. I hope I get to see one game at least before the year is over.
Gubernatorial candidate Harold Levander, born October 10th, 1910. Graduated Gustavus Adolphus College, 1932, University of Minnesota Law School, 1935. Thought about the governor's position for perhaps 30 years. Announced in December, began campaigning ever since. Father of 3 children, perhaps governor of Minnesota. This is J.B. Eckert, KSDP News.
We can be proud in Minnesota again.
The Democrats will counter in the general campaign with William Youngdahl, a political unknown with a famous name, who confounded the experts by beating everybody in the DFL primary for Railroad and Warehouse Commissioner, Harold Christensen for State Treasurer, former National Commander of the VFW, Robert Hansen of South St. Paul for State Auditor, incumbent Joe Donovan for Secretary of State, former Assistant Attorney General and Conservation Commissioner Wayne Olson for Attorney General, Minneapolis businessman Robert Short for Lieutenant Governor, and incumbent Carl F. Rollbog for Governor. Most were members of the Rollbog Rump ticket, which swept to victory over the DFL-endorsed candidates in the primary. What of Rollbog? How does he campaign, speak, travel, and think? Here is KSTP's Don Beeler.
Portrait of a candidate through the eyes of his wife. Her name is Florence.
Despite the increases that we have seen established at our state colleges and the forward thrust,
well, Rollbog is that way. He will take on the whole country if it's for something that he feels is right and just and belongs to the people.
System in Minnesota, the additions to our state colleges, we are winding up this current biennium.
The candidate is Carl Fritjof Rollbog, 53, native of Northfield, graduate of St. Olaf College, teacher, father of two, candidate, state Democratic chairman, 8 years lieutenant governor, 4 years governor. He has been called stubborn, plodding, inarticulate, inefficient. He has been called loyal, efficient, articulate, and steady as the North Star. He is strongest among the people. And this is where he takes his case. In the 87 counties, by air, road, rail, Rollbog goes to the people.
It is a bright, clear, cold, and chilly November 2nd morning. As the Great Northern's Western Star, with the Rollbog Victory Express aboard, heads north, probing deep into the 6th and 7th districts. Between Elk River and St. Cloud at the moment, you hear the whistle of the train, and in the background, the clickety-clack of the wheels, which Governor Carl Rollbog, fighting for his political life, hopes will carry him on to victory. He will stop at 14 cities in 2 days on this old-fashioned whistle stop campaign trip. This is Don Beeler, KSTP News, aboard the Rollbog Victory Express, heading north.
The campaign is on the wane. Rollbog is on the hustings.
How are you there? Okay, we'll be around. Hi there. How are you today? Good morning, Harry. Nice to see you this morning.
I got a sign on your, of you on my farm out there. I'm a Herbmar Farm. Herb Whisk is my name.
Yes, sir. Nice to see you. Who's to be? Whisk. Nice to see you there.
Well, we'll get as many as we can to vote for you.
How are you there? Nice to see you today. How are you there?
Fine.
Nice to see you.
You stop at St. Cloud?
You stop now coming to St. Cloud Bowl. Sauk Center.
Rollbog loves people. He likes to be with people. And he thinks and feels very strongly that an exchange between people and himself is probably the best way to let them know him and him to learn from them. And frankly, I will say, campaigning, you learn more, I suspect, than you ever teach.
For Rollbog, this is the end of the long, long road. A road which has included a recount, a convention defeat, a primary victory, and another general campaign. But he keeps on going.
I suspect a great deal of it is willpower. I do know that he has an ability to strap a seatbelt on in an airplane and go to sleep before the airplane takes off. So he catches cat naps whenever possible. And that plus just sheer determination, I think, is what keeps him going.
The days and the weeks wear on. The countless miles rush away behind the private planes. The plant gates become shrouded in the early morning mists. Luncheons become more and more the same, and the headlamps stab into the long nights ahead. But through it all, the words return and return and drive him on.
I have never yet lost a state election. Never. And I don't intend to begin in 1966.
Well, you remember the circumstances under which this statement was made. It was during the primary contest when everyone said he couldn't be elected. He wasn't pretty on television. And he isn't, according to some, the handsomest man in the world. And so he thought, he said, you know, this is the same face, the same person that's won all these statewide elections. And I do believe I can win. Again, we didn't go into it for the exercise.
Rolvaag calls constantly for a discussion of the issues, and he lays his record before the voters.
And I want you to know that as long as I'm governor of Minnesota, there shall be no sales tax in Minnesota.
Rolvaag calls an issue the progress that has been made in the state of Minnesota. The things that have been achieved in the state of Minnesota, the things that he would like to see achieved in the future. After all, that's why he's running. Dealing with the problems of our state, not personalities, and never a personal attack.
And Rolvaag feels the bite of criticism from within his own party, as he stated in September of 1965.
The party leadership has said, in effect, we're sorry, Carl, we don't think you can win. Based on the present situation, as complicated and complex and as troublesome as it is, I can win the election in November of 1966.
And he feels the bite of criticism from without as well.
He has always felt that to do anything and do a job well, you're bound to have someone disagree with you. You know, even in the family, we don't all agree all the time. And so he feels that he's criticized. All right, he's criticized. Many times we would like to put the facts straight, because many of the criticisms are based on things that just aren't so. But he reads it, he goes away, or he listens to it on the radio, and he goes away and does other things. Of course, they're talking about the fellow I love. And I am human, and I think I take more seriously and more to heart some of the criticisms, some of the false charges, than he does. But then you just consider the source and go right along, because this too will pass.
And Rolvaag worries about the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, personally and as a party.
Of course he's concerned about the DFL. He was one of the early ones active in the DFL right after Vice President Humphrey put the party together. He was very active right away. Of course he's concerned. This is, he has great belief in the principles for which this party stands, and he feels that people should be aware of what the party stands for, and the people who are working in the party should be working not for people, but for the ideas that the party is supposed to stand for and does. He's still more concerned about the party than about himself.
Rolvaag does not let up. He crisscrosses the state and frankly admits the general election is an anticlimax after the primary, and it's all too long.
I think that if you took a poll of all candidates on both sides of the aisle, you would find that unanimous agreement in this one area everyone would like a shorter campaign. It's, as a matter of fact, he facetiously said once, you know, the first qualification for being in politics is not knowledge, experience, or desire to do well. The first major qualification is just sheer physical stamina. And that's what it takes, and this has been a very, very long one.
Occasionally, Rolvag gets away from it all.
You go fishing or go hunting. And this he does, of course. He is a great outdoorsman, loves the outdoors. He's had a couple of fishing trips, and he did go duck hunting twice for half days. This, when Rolvag gets out in the open spaces, this is just completely relaxes him. Not thought one of anything going on anyplace else except to catch that fish or shoot that duck.
But the respites are few and far between. As Rolvag takes a page from Harry Truman's book and goes to the people aboard a train, he develops another cold. And for him, colds are an enemy to be feared.
He is very susceptible to bronchial pneumonia. And if he gets a cold, it invariably goes into bronchial pneumonia. And that's when he goes in the hospital with 103 or 4 degree temperature and they take care of it. But he's always been very susceptible to cold. I'm sure that when you're tired and your stamina isn't up, that it's, you can't resist them as easily.
Rolvag speaks to breakfast meetings, luncheon meetings, dinner meetings, and galas. Coffee hours, receptions, bean feeds, and state meetings. He is becoming more and more articulate as the weeks go on.
As you know, anybody who speaks about something they know a great deal about becomes very fluent. After all, as he has once said, there is no training ground for governor. You just have to be the governor, and then you learn. And as he has learned more, and he knows his subject, he knows the state of Minnesota, he knows the governor's job, it just comes more freely. He does have some problems sometimes when he's very tired, because he was shot up during the war. His tongue is a patchwork of little pieces sewed together. And when he's tired on occasion, he'll start to say a word and realize that he can't and have to change it. But basically, other than that, I think that it's just the knowledge of the job.
Without the imposition of a sales tax on the backs of the consumers in Minnesota. And I want you to know that as long as I'm governor of Minnesota, there shall be no sales tax in Minnesota.
And so the hour is at hand, with the people sighing none too soon, and Rolvag praying not too late.
He is very firm in his convictions about things which he thinks are right or should be done, and he will just stand there and fight for or defend these things.
The fact of the matter is that a sales tax is very, very simple. It is a regressive tax, it is an unfair tax, and if you want to add 3 cents out of every dollar on the cost of your grocery basket, if you want to add 3 cents out of every dollar to the clothes that you buy for your children or yourselves, if you want to add 3 cents to every dollar you spend on drugs and medicines, then exercise your right and vote the Republican ticket.
Portrait of a Candidate. This is Don Beeler, KSTP News.
The primary campaign is over, and Rolvag must heal the wounds. He begins with a meeting of the DFL's State Central Committee on September 25th.
Thank you very much, Chairman Farr and fellow delegates to the State Central Committee of the Democratic Farmer Labor Party. Mr. Vice President, Senator McCarthy, Senator Mondale, our distinguished congressional delegation led by the Dean of the Minnesota delegation in Washington, Congressman Blotnick. Today we move on to victory in November. Victory will not come easily. We all know that. We look forward to working with an entire new generation in the field of politics and political activity. One of the results of this primary was to bring into the political sphere, into political action, many, many, countless of hundreds of new, vigorous, alert, intelligent young men and young women, and some older ones as well.
The Lieutenant Governor candidate, Bob Short, echoes a party unity.
No matter where I visit, I find that there is good feeling for the ticket that was nominated in the primary, and it would appear that the Democratic Party will go forward in this general election campaign with a solid united front.
DFL State Chairman George Farr is having his troubles.
And I can report to you in all honesty that in recent weeks I've eaten turkey and I've eaten crow, and turkey's better.
But the campaign is on in earnest. At the University of Minnesota, Rolvaag and Levander debate several issues. Levander has charges.
And I contend that his influence has been more negative than positive in the field of education. I refer first of all to the fact that he made ordered a cut of 4.5% in the aids to education. And that was on a basis that turned out, after a lot of bickering, to have been totally unnecessary and unjustified.
Rolvaag clarifies his stand on busing parochial students and the funds involved.
The Minnesota Constitution has one of the strongest prohibitions against the use of public funds for private education that exists in any state constitution in the United States. On the question of whether or not monies are given to the institution is a separate question as to whether or not public monies are used for the children.
Levander takes his campaign north to a section of Highway 35, used as a late campaign issue in 1962.
People in Minnesota like fair play, and I think they remember with a great deal of disappointment that they did not get, and that there was not fair play in the election when Governor Rolvaag used a fake issue on this very spot and on the ramp that we just inspected, trying to claim that there was some deficiency and that the highway department chief would be fired and that federal funds would be shut off, and making a lot of charges which never did materialize and which were proved to be foundless.
GOP Lieutenant Governor candidate James Getz takes a stand against a sales tax.
A sales tax would not have saved the taconite industry in northern Minnesota. And the challenge in Minnesota today, it seems to me, is not to move us from third or sixth in the amount of taxes we pay state and locally to second or first. The challenge is to bring our income up to the same level as our capacity and what we are demanded to pay in the area of taxes themselves, state and locally.
Rolvaag stands firmly against a sales tax. Levander says he is against a general sales tax, which is regressive in nature. GOP candidate for Secretary of State Bill O'Brien lashes out at 12-year incumbent Joe Donovan.
The Secretary of State's office is the most politically riddled, wasteful, inefficient, an archaic organization in all of Minnesota government. My opponent, Joseph Donovan, has now been Secretary of State for 12 long years. During this period, he has done nothing, absolutely nothing, to clean up this mess. In spite of one government study after another, which have recommended changes and improvements in his office, he has failed to act.
In plain and simple language, he hands out lucrative jobs to politically appointed individuals in return for services rendered to him. These jobs are given to 101 deputy registrars across the state who charge a 50-cent fee for issuing license plates. We know what these registrars get in return. They get more than $6.5 million since the year my opponent took office. Now, what does he get in return for these jobs? He gets a built-in campaign organization operating in every county in the state. He gets a built-in automatic campaign fund for his campaigns. And thirdly, he gets almost virtual renomination at his party convention.
Donovan did not reply to the charge. In Minneapolis, William Hathaway, candidate for the 5th District Congressional seat, hits on national issues.
It seems to me that before we have wage and price controls, we should cut back on domestic spending. We should tighten our belts. I think that wage and price controls in a period like this are the ultimate in idiocy. And I would certainly argue that wage and price controls cannot be successful without rationing, and the possibilities of wage controls, price controls, and rationing in a period of full employment and full production as we have is simply idiotic.
Congressman Don Fraser, Hathaway's opponent, tells of his campaign.
My campaign theme is Look to America's Future. During this campaign, I'm going to talk about the fine performance of this Democratic Congress. And I think the record proves that if we'll continue to have a Democratic Congress, we'll be able to meet the problems which lie ahead.
There is William Youngdahl, the little-known candidate who now faces not only Republican opposition for Railroad and Warehouse Commissioner, but DFL opposition as well. Chairman George Farr calls for an examination of Youngdahl's record. Youngdahl challenges Farr to keep him off the sample ballot.
At one time in my life, the only time I've ever been involved with the law of any type, this is a little bit personal, I had to serve 11 days in the workhouse for, it was an action out of my, pertaining to my divorce, when I didn't appear at the proper time when I should have. Other than that, I have absolutely, my record is clear. It's been checked out, I'm sure, by any number of people. I have been a part-time cab driver. They checked you out very thoroughly on that job. If there was anything at all in my record, it would have been brought out at that time.
Wayne Olson, DFL candidate for Attorney General, comments on Youngdahl.
I didn't vote for him in the primary. He did win the primary, and he is on the ticket.
You happy? Not happy about it.
I'm not particularly happy, and I would have preferred to have had the man that I voted for win.
But the big, big issue, if it can be called that, is American Allied Insurance. In late September, Harold Levander asks a series of questions about memos and corporate campaign checks.
Governor Olvog, when did you first learn the American Allied Insurance Company was in financial difficulty? Governor Olvog, why didn't you take immediate action when Keith resigned in February of 1965? Governor Olvog, when did you first meet the Kitzers of Chicago, owners of the bankrupt insurance empire, and what was your relationship with them? Governor Olvog, when did you first talk to Attorney General Mondale about the Allied Insurance Company situation? Governor Olvog, what did you know about American Allied before you reappointed Cy Magnuson as Minnesota Commissioner of Insurance?
And Levander asked about a $2,000 campaign contribution made by the Kitzers to the Rollbog-Mondale campaign, later returned. He was questioned by KSTP's Jack Wadland.
What's the duty of a candidate in checking out the campaign contributions that come into all his multifarious volunteer committees, in your opinion?
Well, under the law, it is the duty of the recipient of the money, who should know that a corporate contribution is illegal, to return it if he does get one immediately, and not accept it and cash it, and then wait until there's a receiver appointed, with the receiver having a legal obligation to collect illegal funds, and then return it.
But this might well be done by a second party rather than the candidate involved. Is that correct?
Be done by a second party?
In other words, do you know where all your campaign contributions have come from at this point?
No, but I'm certainly hoping, and I know that my people are instructed that we receive no campaign contributions from corporations, and if they do, by some mistake, they are returned.
Have you received any?
I don't know. I haven't been in a position to examine every one of the contributions.
The issue appeared to die away when Homer Bonhiver, the court-appointed receiver for American Allied, announced that he had called the contribution to the attention of the Rollbog-Mondale Committee, and the check, being corporate, was returned. But then in October, Lavender held another news conference to display a memorandum he said should have called the American Allied troubles to Rollvog's attention much earlier, and he displayed more documents on the case. KSTP's Jack Watlin, in an exclusive interview, talked with Philip Kitzer, Jr., and asked him about the contribution given to Sidney Goff, DFL fundraiser and Rollvog associate.
Dave Cromin and I were negotiating with Sid Goff for the purchase of the Phelan Park State Bank, and we met in his apartment to draw up a formal contract. And at that time, Sid Goff asked Dave Cromin and I to attend that dinner, which amounted to $2,000 in tickets.
How would you label the contribution then? Solicited, unsolicited, hard sell, soft sell, or how would you?
Hard sell. He's a good salesman.
You were quoted as calling it a shakedown. Was that a, would you?
Yeah, I'd say shakedown. Call Sid Goff, Jesse James in a business suit.
Did you receive any favors whatsoever for that contribution?
Yeah, I got indicted up here, I say that.
Did you receive a thank you note?
Yeah, I got a, I did get a thank you note for it. And then Sid Goff gave me tickets to the inaugural ball.
The governor and the senator might argue that because of subsequent developments, and including the indictment, that you might do anything, even lie, to get to them. How would you answer that charge?
No, that wouldn't be true. That's not true. I wouldn't lie. Up to this point, I haven't said anything, and I wouldn't say anything if Sid Goff hadn't come out now about this check and saying it was unsolicited, and Rovag and Mondale saying they never met me, when in fact they have. And it's to be expected that they would deny it. They're running for public office. Everyone expects them to deny it.
Sidney Goff, who said he did not know the contribution was corporate, is quick to reply.
He is an unmitigated liar who will say anything about anyone at any time. He has been wholly discredited by the Ramsey County District Court, by state and federal law enforcement agencies, and by the thousands of innocent people whom he has defrauded.
Rollvog, silent on the issue at the moment, calls a news conference. The governor is angry.
The inordinate attention given to Harold Lavander's remarks concerning the handling of a memorandum dated August 31st, 1964, pertaining to the American Allied Insurance Company by me and the then Attorney General, Walter Mondale, is nothing less than a vicious attempt at character assassination and indicative of an unholy alliance to inflict the purely political wound of doubt among the uninformed and to force circumvention of justice.
Senator Walter Mondale issues a statement denying knowledge of the memorandum. Robert Forsyth, his opponent, doesn't buy it.
I can't go behind the man's mind, and I don't know what his problem is, but there is a problem. And whether it's a convenient loss of memory or whether it's chronic, I really don't know. Or whether it's deliberate. If it's deliberate, then, of course, it's lying.
Mondale reacts, and he is angry.
When he suggests that I have lied, when he suggests that I would knowingly and be involved with people of this sort. I respect my office. I respect the United States Senate. I respect my public reputation. I believe that my opponent has slandered me. He has surely cheapened this campaign. I was in Washington. I wasn't back here. I didn't see the check. I didn't solicit the money. I didn't know the people who were contributing it. Neither the company or the name meant anything to me. When I sent thank you notes out, there was no basis for me to doubt their integrity.
Goff continues to say he believed the contribution was personal. Forsyth does not buy this either.
This is a lawyer speaking to those people who might be interested in purchasing a bank, a business transaction. And yet we're told that we didn't really know these people, we didn't understand that there was a corporate enterprise involved, and we were just kind of sitting around discussing the purchase of some kind of a business. And just coincidentally with our wife, we just threw out the mention that there was a $500 a couple dinner, and the poor person ran to the telephone, charged with emotion, called up his office, and forthwith came $2,000. No, I don't think that you can goose the press on this one.
On October 20th, United States District Attorney Pat Foley calls a news conference.
I have an announcement to make. Early this morning at approximately 1 o'clock, United States District Judge was called on the telephone by Philip Kitzer, Jr., and apparently was threatened, and an attempt was made to intimidate him. I have here a letter from Judge Miles Lord, which details the conversation. The judge reports that Mr. Kitzer threatened that he would harm the reputation of Judge Lord and others. In the report, Judge Lord states that Mr. Kitzer, in his telephone conversation, said, "Congratulations, Miles, on being a federal district judge. You are the first federal district judge I've ever talked to. You got appointed through a whitewash by the FBI, but we gave you a hard time all the way." Later in the conversation, according to the report of Judge Lord, Mr. Kitzer said, "How's Rolvog's election coming? Who's ahead now, Miles? You and Rolvog got us, but we are going to win this one." Mr. Kitzer then referred to United States Senator Walter Mondale when he said, "Do you suppose we could get Mondale too?" Furthermore, he added, "I'll look out for myself, but you look out for yourself. I have many friends in many places."
Over in St. Paul, Ramsey County Attorney William Randall, a Republican and gubernatorial aspirant, calls the Ramsey County Grand Jury into session. The jury will deal with a $2,000 check presented by Kitzer to Sidney Goff. Both men are indicted, and the case is tried before a judge without a jury. It is pending. And so the long road comes to an end. Minnesotans breathe a sigh of relief. It is the close of Campaign 66. The preceding program prepared by KSTP Radio News, which is solely responsible for its content. This is Brooks Henderson.